No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So feel free to call in at 888-627-6008 and join the conversation, or you can put something into our chat box at the at bbsradio.com and we'll try to answer your questions. It's great to have Maria here with me tonight. Hello, Maria.
Hi.
I just got to tell you, you and everybody else in California are in my prayers.
Thank you.
Every day, you know, it just seems horrible out there with the fires. How is that, Maria? How are you? Are you staying safe?
I am. I just found out that my girlfriend's daughter has it. She's in her early 40s, has a husband and two children. So she's on day five, and they've tested the husband and the son and daughter twice, and they're negative all. But she said they have to get tested after day 10 because it can take up to 10 days for symptoms to exist. And so that's the first real, I have another friend whose daughter had it in Dallas, Texas at the beginning. So those are the two, that I know personally firsthand that have it. And it just, I know it's not going away. I mean, I go to Mass on Saturday nights at 5 o'clock, and you have to register on Monday for that Saturday. They only take 80 people. You have to print a ticket. They have a list for you when you check in. They hand sanitize. You've got to wear the mask the entire time except for when you get communion. And it's outdoors, of course. And I leaned over to my boyfriend. I said, what are we going to do when the weather turns cold? And he's like, well, that's not going to happen. I said, yeah, it's here to stay through the end of the year. I'm convinced, because with the flu season coming, it's not going to get any better, I don't think. And I'm usually an optimistic person.
Yeah. I mean, we've known two people that have passed, our neighbor, our next door neighbor, and the mother of a dear friend of mine. Both, however, I think they were both in their 90s. One was in her early 90s. One was in her later, 97. And they were both in facilities, one in a nursing home, the other in a hospital. Mm. So I guess we figured they didn't have much of a chance once they contracted it. But Washington, D.C. has been pretty good as far as COVID-19 goes. We're one of the lower, we have one of the lower infection rates in the country these days. There was a time
except
when there
for that, those 1,500 people that assembled on Thursday at the lawn of the White House, what was that about?
Excuse me, how irresponsible is that? Not only that they did it, but that, that it was on national TV and well, we expect this man in the White House to be a leader and set an example, right? He keeps on not doing it. And, now they found that four people from the Republican convention mm-hmm. have tested positive. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how many people were at the Republican convention. At the Democrat convention, I can tell you because I was a super delegate, there were only a handful of people. There were only maybe 100 or 150 people, and they were all there as facilitators. And I thought, that would probably be the same for the Republicans, that there would only be a
Me
handful.
Me too. And that it was outdoors. And so the six feet apart and the mask mandate. Yeah. Instead, they're chumming up. I watched the preamble to it with the kissing and the hugging, and there was no elbow pumps. It was like the pre-COVID days. And I mean, it's so irresponsible. I have a question for you, Michael, and maybe you'll get into the minds of the powers that be, because our listeners know that you've been doing this for a long, long time. Why isn't Joe Biden acting presidential and going to the places that should be visited and doing what Trump isn't doing?
I don't know that. I don't know what to say about that other than...
He has a perfect opportunity to step in where we need a daddy to calm us and to take care of us and to comfort us and to make sure that we know that we're going to be okay. And what better way to position himself as the next president?
Well, and you know what? They may be moving in that direction, but there may be part of it. You know, look, he was up in the polls, and the president keeps on doing these ridiculous things over and over again. So there's part of me that believes that it's like, you know, this is a contest. An election is a contest. And it leads me to believe that their strategy has been one of playing it close to the vest, the way you wouldn't have. I know you're a football fan, so yes. Let's use a football analogy. It's the fourth quarter, and we're up by 7 points, and the game, you know, there's 5 minutes left in the game. So what is the strategy? The strategy is
grind out the clock.
You're right, and not make any mistakes, right?
Right.
You don't throw any passes. You keep the ball on the ground.
Right.
You try not to fumble. You try not to make a mistake. Now, in political campaigning, with 60-some days left in the election, I agree with you. That may very well be a mistake. It may be a mistake because there's plenty of time left. And
let's say if he goes to Kenosha, am I saying that correctly? Wisconsin?
Yeah, Kenosha, right.
Okay. So if he goes there tomorrow, that issue needs to be addressed, and we need to calm the fears and the anxiety and the jitters and all of that. If Trump says that's my job, then it's like, well, you should have done that last week. We waited 8 days for you to do something. You didn't. So now we're going to do something.
Right. Well, and that's the other point, you know, is that I think that, you know, there's this feeling that if you just let the president go unbridled for the next 60 days, that's, you know, he's not going to change. He's tweeted out 90 things since yesterday. How does the leader of the free world have time to tweet out 90 things? I think that's what they're saying, too, is that, look, you know, there's an old saying in politics that don't ever shoot a man who's trying to commit suicide.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, and I think that's part of it, too, is they feel like, you know, if we just leave him alone, he'll undo himself. But that's really not, you know, that's not a leadership approach either, as you point out. So I think you'll see Biden do more. I don't think he'll go to Kenosha because the you know, they're saying out there in Wisconsin, the governor's saying, please don't come, don't come. Don't come, Donald Trump. You know, you only exacerbate things. So I'm not sure you'll see him go to Kenosha, but yeah.
Or Portland, Oregon.
Or Portland.
They need help in the worst way. Their mayor can't get anybody to listen to him. And I just think that it's the perfect opportunity for him to assume the mantle of leadership that we are sorely lacking and to do it in our best interests. He's not doing it as self-serving. We need help. We're suffering.
I think there's one last thing, too, is that the president and his people are out there trying to frame this argument as if the Democrats are at fault here, even though they're in control. And I don't think he wants to take responsibility for it. You know, I think his people are saying, look, they're tearing up Portland. They're tearing up Kenosha. But this is under Trump's watch. It's not under your watch. You know, be careful not to assume responsibility for it. So, but, you know, leaders are bold people. they're not tepid and timid. And I think you will see them step up to the plate more and more. But I think they're just trying to find their way. And, you know, the Republicans have gotten a bump out of their convention. Yeah. And they don't want to make things worse, you know, because this is really playing into the president's law and order thing. People, mm-hmm. you know, people are afraid of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Now we've got this teenager.
Yeah.
Who's not even old enough to own a gun,
right?
Murdering two people,
yep.
You know, and now this person in Portland's been shot, and we've had other violence, and the violence is not, you know, nobody wants the violence. Democrats don't want the violence any more than Republicans want it.
That's what I agree with. I think everybody is jittery, and I'm sure it's not the norm, but it's the few that are making the mayhem and the chaos and the trouble and the destruction. And I just think we need somebody to help us because we're obviously struggling. I don't think our country has really ever gone through something like this.
Well, I don't know. I remember 1968, and it wasn't, you know, Bobby Kennedy was killed. Martin Luther King was killed. There was a lot of bad. There was 74 people killed in a single riot in Detroit. Black people in 1968. So, I mean, 68. So, yeah, it's been a while. That's for sure.
But we also then have the pandemic on top of that.
Right.
We have the unemployment on top of that.
Right.
And we have the economic shutdown on top of that. I mean, this isn't just about politics.
Right.
We're suffering. I think it's unprecedented. And then we've got the California wildfires, you know, I mean, and you've got
and the
Hurricane Laura. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, in many ways, I think you're right. It is unprecedented.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like there's a solution in sight, at least this year.
Well, yeah, not to all these problems. No, there certainly isn't.
Yeah, so.
But before we bring our guest on, we have a guest tonight, a special guest, the only Republican in American history to vote for D.C. statehood. And we're going to have him on in a minute. But that's not why we're having him on.
That's
no, we're having him on for a lot of reasons. But the bill now has been put on the calendar in the Senate. And this is a little step forward. Just
the
so
bill now for statehood, for
the
D.C.
bill
statehood.
For statehood has passed the House of Representatives. It's now in the United States Senate. We bypassed the committee process. Normally what would happen with the bill, it would go into committee in the Senate and be discussed and reported out before it went to a floor vote. We're putting it on the calendar directly, so it goes directly to a floor vote. The only problem is that Mitch McConnell is in charge, and he's not going to let it come to a vote. He's already said that he's not going to let it come to a vote. So this is a maneuver to try to get around him.
Let's say best case scenario, what would that look like?
Well, it would look like they would bring it right to the floor for a vote.
And would it pass?
No.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't stand a chance because it needs 60 votes and you only got 42 co-sponsors on the bill. And even if you get all the Democrats and the independents, you're still going to be, you know, 13 votes short. So we don't even have all the Democrats, as a matter of fact, at this point.
Is that right?
So, yeah. A couple of them, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, and there's a couple more that aren't on the bill. Angus King, who's an independent but votes with the Democrats most of the time from Maine, and there's a couple more. But so unless we get rid of cloture, which would be to, you know, do what they call the nuclear option, which has only been used twice, that's not going to happen. Oh. Well, it looks like Congressman Gilchrist, are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, thank you for being on the show. Well, we appreciate it so much.
You're welcome.
And let me just tell our listeners who we're talking to. This is Maryland Representative Wayne Gilchrist, former representative, Republican from the 1st District, 1st Congressional District of Maryland, former decorated Marine, Vietnam vet, Purple Heart, Bronze Star, Navy Commendation Medal. God bless you for your service,
Thank
sir.
You.
And currently the Director of Education Programs for the Eastern Shore Conservancy. And I must tell you, we want to talk about statehood first, but I spent many joyful hours sailing on the Chesapeake Bay. So thank
oh, wonderful.
You for the work you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But first, let's talk about D.C. statehood. In 1993, you voted in favor of a bill, H.R. 51, that failed, unfortunately, 153 to 277. But that gives you the distinction of being the only Republican in history in Congress to vote for D.C. statehood.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. And how was that to go against... That must have been a very hard thing to do. Not even all the Democrats in Maryland voted for the bill.
Right. I know. Yeah. Going back to that time, you know, that was not the only vote that happened that day. It was not the only vote that happened that week. There's always a lot of churning activities and challenges, whether it's on the floor, the full committee, the subcommittee, issues that you deal with. So there's a lot of issues. It wasn't the only thing on my mind for that time or that day or that vote. Mm-hmm. But I felt that the vote for D.C. statehood that day, I as an individual, felt that they didn't give the District of Columbia the dignity that they deserved. Because in essence, there was agreement between the two parties that those who needed to vote for it would be able to, but nobody wanted it to pass. Mm-hmm. So Ben Cardin and I were on. He's the other member of Congress. He's a U.S. senator now,
right,
standing in the back, the back bench of the House floor, and we had a brief conversation about which way should we vote, and part of it was that the whole idea should be taken more seriously. Number two, you offer dignity to the people in the District of Columbia. And then the last thing is they certainly have a right to representation like any other state. That's what I felt. So we voted in favor of D.C. statehood after that conversation. And then some Republicans ran up to me because the time had already expired. And they said, quick, change your vote. You made a mistake. And I said, no, I didn't make a mistake. That's how I wanted to vote. So the other thing about the thing about pressure is you want to take it into consideration, mainly because you don't want to be a wildcat that becomes isolated and you can't work with other members.
Right.
So and you have to work with members from both sides of the aisle. And if you want to get something done with your own party, you can't be seen as too much of an outlier. So you take those things into consideration. But when you feel that what you're doing is what you feel is right, at least the way I and many others looked at it, you were then pressured to the degree that you allowed yourself to be pressured. In other words, you know, no one's going to put you in a locked closet or the stockade or anything. And then when you earned a degree of being independent, but independent because you had done your research already and you felt strongly about it, then that part of it was okay.
Well, you know, to your last comment about not wanting to be too much of an outlier, we talked to, the senator from Maine, Susan Collins, a few weeks ago, and also Tim Scott, only African-American Republican from South Carolina. And that's what Scott said. Scott said that Scott's people said he feels your pain, he understands the issue, but he doesn't want to be the first Republican out there. He's not brave enough in the Senate to be the only Republican supporting this. And you know, as a politician, I certainly understand that.
Sure.
But we also should mention there was one other non-Democrat who voted for it, a guy from Vermont named Bernie Sanders.
Oh, Bernie.
Who's gone on to do a few other things as well.
Right.
But
Bernie.
But yeah, you've always had the reputation of being an independent thinker and someone who voted, I think, their conscience very often. And so that's my real question to you right now is what's happened to the Wayne Gilchrists and the Lowell Weickers and the Bob Packwoods and the, you know, these people in the Republican Party? There seems to only be a handful of them left, maybe Mitt Romney and one or two others. Why is it? You know, what do you think of a Republican Party that's now walks in lockstep with the president?
Well, I saw it begin to happen shortly after Newt became speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And Newt and then Dick Armey and Tom DeLay and a few others began to draw a line between the Republicans and the Democrats. And they didn't talk about issues as much as they talked about the Democrats do this and the Democrats do that. So they put a line there. And gradually that line, and there's a lot of other reasons for this movement toward consolidating power. But anyway, but then the Republican Party sort of hooked into I think more so to Wall Street, to the Christian Coalition, to AIPAC, and to a lot of other outside organizations where those organizations began to become organized and they began to select members who would be given the money to come to Washington.
Yeah.
And then you would be beholden. First of all, they would not pay for anybody's campaign unless they thought that they were could be controlled. And I hate to say it that way. So as far as every time I voted, I projected myself in the future. First of all, I wanted my kids to be proud of me, and then I project myself in the future. You know, even if you're there for 40 or 50 years, your tenure there expires. And how are you going to feel about yourself when you were there? Did you try to be competent, informed, and did you have a strong backbone of integrity? So that's and I think that movement, the movement toward the Tea Party. And all these other organizations that see the country and the world through a very narrow scope, you have what you have. I remember one time, and they could still do this, I was on the Natural Resources Committee and Don Young was the chairman, mid-90s. And the Natural Resources Committee dealt with a lot of environmental issues. And I was voting differently than Don wanted me to vote. So he sat me down on the House floor one day, and he pretty well reamed me out with little flakes of profanity. So I didn't get angry or anything. I just looked at him. I let him, you know, get all this bluster out. And then when he was done, I said, Don, I want you to look around the House floor, and I want you to point to someone on the House floor that is going to tell you how to vote. And all he said was, well said. And that was the last time he tried to pressure me to vote a certain way.
Well, that's something. So, we know we know Congressman Young a little bit because he's still in Congress. He's from Alaska.
Yes.
And we constantly try to pressure him since Alaska was the last state. I'm sorry, Maria, our resident Republican, I'm sure has something to ask you.
And welcome to the program, and thank you so much for your service for our country and for what you've done with politically. I registered as a Republican when I was 18 years of age, and I am still a Republican. But I don't know if you shared this sentiment. What I feel like is that the party has left me. I don't recognize anybody that is in positions of power in the party that I admire or I respect. And I will be voting for a Democrat for the first time in my entire life for president.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep my party affiliation at the moment. We here in California have something declined to state because I want to vote in the primaries. But I just feel like I have been disenfranchised. And it's really sad to me because I think the senator and I were discussing before you were able to join us. I think we're in a cataclysmic event as a country that is unprecedented for all the things that we're experiencing now. And we don't have the leadership that we need.
Well, it's so nice to talk to you, Maria. My daughter lives in California. And I, you know, I first registered and you had to be 21, but my first president to vote for was Richard Nixon. I've always held high regard for Gerald Ford, certainly Eisenhower, and, you know, on down the line. But the Trump administration is so baffling because of its, I don't know, I'll just say it's gross incompetence, it's lack of integrity, it's criminality. Half the people he's known have gone to jail. And so I'm, but I try to put all that aside and just say there's so many things that have been left undone during this administration, from foreign policy to domestic policy to certainly the coronavirus, that and then just the whole rudeness of Trump's Twitter and bullying to career professionals who spent their life keeping America safe and on top of the world. So,
and how do you align yourself politically now?
Well, I never really aligned myself politically, even going through my whole life. I was never, you know, I registered as a Republican. I wanted to be a member of Congress, and I wanted to see if I could do some good. So I always just looked at, I wanted to get the facts first. And it, by the way, it's pretty easy to get information as a member of Congress. You have the whole Library of Congress, which is the Congressional Research Service. So you want to know something, they have every expert over there that will come to your office and tell you what you want to know. And Mitch McConnell, he was interviewed, you know, I don't know, 6 months ago, or whenever it was, asking him about some aspect of climate change. And Mitch McConnell's answer was, I can't answer that. I'm not a scientist. Mm-hmm. Well, that was such a terrible excuse, because as a lowly rank-and-file member of Congress, I often, with Ron Paul, by the way, we would sit down with someone from the Library of Congress once a week in our office and have lunch and listen to what they were saying about climate change or energy policy or agriculture or the Middle East or Iran, you name it, it's right there. Not to mention the fact that I can remember calling E.O. Wilson, an internationally known scientist from Harvard, and not only did he return my call, he flew to Washington for a visit to talk to me and a number of other members. So if you want information as a member of Congress, it's at your fingertips, the best information in the world.
You know, we should point out, too, Congressman, that to reinforce what you're saying, it's one of the first things Congress did when it was established was to establish the Library of Congress. And they're just an amazing Amazing, amazing resource. Yeah.
So your Google searches generate an individual who actually comes and talks with you in real time. I mean, that sounds so rich and illuminating that it's not just what you can randomly pull up. An expert in the field will advise you about what the policy is.
That's right. You call over to the Library of Congress, and you tell them you want to talk about, and we did it numerous times during the Iraq War. We did it after briefings from the White House about issues in Syria. At the time, we were working on, I and other members, the two more prominent ones was myself and Gregory Meeks, a Democrat from Queens, New York. But Ron Paul was a significant participant, as was Walter Jones, who passed away about a year ago. We met with Iranian parliamentarians in Portugal, Switzerland, Norway, other places, including quietly taking them on a tour of the U.S. Capitol. And we did that because we were hoping sooner rather than later we would have diplomatic relations with Iran, and we wanted to have already relationships with members of their parliament. And it was, well, anyway, that all sort of fell apart.
Are you still involved with the National Iranian American Council?
No, I don't do, we email occasionally.
Uh-huh.
I really have devoted my time to teaching children K through 12 how the sun makes air and soil, which is the fundamental parts of life. And that's photosynthesis. But that's, and we have 1,200 acres that belongs to the state that we use for our program on the Sassafras River. So that's where all my, and then when I get home at night, I'm just too exhausted to do anything else.
Well, I bet. But, you know, I got to say, again, about your last comment, this is the thing that bothered me most when I was watching the Republican convention. Now, I don't know if you watched it, Congressman, but I watched the whole thing. And this idea that they kept on saying how this administration reaches out for other people's opinions. I just couldn't get over that, because I was thinking to myself the whole time, anybody that doesn't agree with this guy gets fired.
Right.
So yeah. I don't know who they're reaching out to. So that's really sad that they aren't reaching out. Did you watch some of the convention?
Well, I have to tell you, Senator, that I would flip to it. No, all I have is an antenna, so I don't have Dish or anything else. I have about four stations I can get on my television. But I got this on public television, so I get public television, PBS. If the commentators were talking, I left it on.
Yeah.
If somebody else was talking, I turned it off.
Yeah. So. Isn't that sad? But I can certainly understand that. Well, let me move on a little bit.
Sure.
To your favorite subject, I think. When I was in college, I met a guy who wrote a book called Beautiful Swimmers about crabbing in the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah.
At the time, I also had a friend that owned a marina, Tall Timbers, in Southern Maryland, and spent 25 years sailing on the bay.
Oh,
it's
nice.
The most incredible resource. I mean, I don't know how people, if people around America know that, but it's just an amazing resource. And I know it's been in decline, but I've read reports that it's coming back. I hope that's the truth. And, as you know, your daughter lives in California. Maria lives in California. California is burning.
Yeah.
What about global climate change? What's happening? How's it affecting the Bay? And do you think things are getting better in that regard?
Well, I just want to tell you, I was just on a Zoom call with Katie before you called.
Oh.
So that was very nice. Yeah, we didn't. And we spoke briefly about the fires, but mostly it's just catching up.
Yeah, sure.
I think I'll try to make this succinct. The state of Maryland has in its public school a requirement that students are taught environmental issues K through 12. And they're very specific as to what they want the kids to learn. And it's a very good program. In fact, my environmental school helps Kent County public schools meet those environmental literacy standards. We take the requirements from the state that has to be taught in the classroom. We create an activity in the field that corresponds to that classroom lesson. And as I told Maria, in essence, we teach agroecology, and we deal with it through the lens of photosynthesis, the carbon cycle, soil health, and then its impact on climate change. So they'll know nature's principles. Now, I'll say that this is all over the state of Maryland, Pennsylvania to some extent, Virginia to some extent. They're teaching young people the principles of nature and that climate change is real. And here's how you can solve that problem. Just not all the terrible things that it's causing, but here are the very specific solutions to climate change. So globally, we are, I think, first of all, we're in trouble with climate change. With the increase in heat, sea level rise, damage to the landscape, damage to our marine ecosystem. When there's too much CO2 in the atmosphere, the trees don't absorb it anymore. Right now, the trees are a carbon sink. Green things are carbon sinks. But if there's too much carbon in the air, things can get reversed and go pretty bad, pretty fast. But there is also very specific solutions to all this. You know, not just we have to burn less carbon, but if everybody in the world planted trees and every farmer followed best management practices, you could absorb the CO2 we're putting in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And it would stay in the soil like it has done that for millions of years. So, climate change is an issue which then creates the problem of food insecurity with an overpopulation. So you have we have a lot of things happening in the next couple of decades where we have the technology and the know-how to solve. So we got to get the right leaders in place.
Yeah, and how are we doing on that front? It seems to me that appointing a climate denier, a climate change denier to the head of the EPA probably wasn't the best thing to do. And is America leading on that front, do you think? Still, weren't we leaders at one time?
We were. I think Barack Obama pushed ahead America's leadership in global warming. George W. Bush, we sort of coasted. Bill Clinton, we didn't get as far as we could have with Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. I think we would have got further with climate change with George H.W. Bush and the people he had in his administration than we did with Bill Clinton. And then George W. Bush came in, and Barack Obama pushed us out to the upper echelon of being a leader. And then, of course, we have Trump. So I think if we can get Joe Biden back in, and I don't care what party anybody is, I just want him to be smart. I want him to be honest. I wanted to have good leadership qualities. I wanted to be calm and in turbulent waters. So let's say Biden gets elected, then private and the federal government's got to be responsible in this end, and they have to be connected with the rest of the world to synchronize climate change issues. But there's a lot of private sector smart people out there that, in very short order, we will be driving around in electric cars and trucks. we're going to make batteries from viruses. The technology that is potential to explode with the right kind of incentive and momentum is pretty extraordinary.
Wow. Maria, do you have a question?
I sure do. So, Congressmember, you have come out as endorsing Joe Biden for president. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So would you like to share with our listeners the inordinate amount of other Republicans that are doing the same thing? You're talking EPA Director Christine Whitman, for example. I mean, the list is pretty impressive. Would you like to let our listeners know the company that you're keeping?
Congress. This was all listed in the New York Times.
Yeah.
And probably more so. But George W. Bush is not supporting Trump.
Right.
Mitt Romney is not supporting Trump.
Mm-hmm.
John Kasich is supporting Joe Biden. Colin Powell is supporting Joe Biden. Miles Taylor is former Homeland Security Chief of Staff. Christine Todd Whitman, as you said. Susan Molinari, a former Republican member of Congress. Jeff Flake. A fellow named Francis Mooney, a former member of Congress from Florida. Charlie Dent, who I know very well, Republican from Pennsylvania. It's a pretty long. Jim Colby from Arizona. Tom Coleman, well, former member of Jim
John
Leach.
McCain's widow, too.
John McCain, Cindy McCain.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're right. So, yes, there's Chris Shays, another Republican. Peter Smith from Vermont. Alan Steelman. Jim Walsh, who I knew very well from New York. Dick Zimmer from New Jersey, Republican. So we're and every one of those people, they were people that looked for information to make decisions. They wanted information, and their staffs were oriented toward research on these issues. They weren't just handed talking points by some outside group that would pay for their campaign. So it's if there's anything that good that comes out of Donald Trump is that the American people will realize that democracy does not run on automatic pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That every single individual is a gear in this machine that you have to work together in sync to get it running smoothly. And a lot of people are learning more about how government works during this period of time, so we can make a really big correction.
Well, I think that you're very right about that. My two daughters, are a little younger. They're in their 20s, and they're fired up. They're absolutely they're absolutely engaged in a way that they've never been engaged before.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that is a positive part of his legacy. I have a personal question for you because I grew up in North New Jersey, and I understand you're from Rahway. So how do you get from Rahway to rural Maryland? How did that happen for you?
Well, can we talk for another hour and a half?
I guess it's probably a long journey.
I'll limit it basically to one sentence.
Yeah.
I got married in Delaware because I was going to Delaware State College. That's an African American school. I always wanted to go to a black college, and it was fascinating to do that. So I got my first teaching job in New Jersey. Then I got a chance to teach in northern Vermont near Canada, which I loved dearly because the mountains and the snow and the cold.
Yeah.
But my wife couldn't stand snow in May. I don't know why.
Yeah.
So
wonder your daughter's in California.
So we moved here in 1979 to a town where Barbara's mother was born.
Wow.
So I was very distraught in an area that was too flat, too hot. So I bought a canoe for $50, and I've been paddling ever since.
Wow.
So here we are.
That's a great story.
Good for your upper body and your core.
And I can understand.
Yeah, right.
I can understand how distressed you are, because the first time I went to California as a kid from New Jersey, and I walked out on the beach in my penny, in my black loafers and black socks and long jeans, and I looked at all the young guys with long blonde hair and surfboards. I said, "This is no place for a kid from New Jersey. I need to get back east." So I'm sure it was a great, a big change for you. But thank God you did it, because the people of Kent County were better for having you, I think.
Well, I can still see you sitting on the front stoop reading the Newark Evening News.
Yeah, Newark Evening News. That was it. And I grew up behind a factory. And the wonderful thing was, it was a toy factory. So they gave toys to all the kids. The Rumco Toy Factory. They gave free toys to all the kids in the neighborhood, because they used to annoy their parents, you know, with by blocking driveways with trucks and stuff. And that's how they reached out to
good PR, right?
Good PR.
Yes.
And then we all went into a serious long state of mourning when the factory sold out to a pharmaceutical company that made Band-Aids and aspirin. So toys to aspirin. But you know,
I think something that's remarkable too, if you don't mind, is that you're one of six sons in your family of origin. What was that like? And how close were you in age to one another?
A year apart.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Are we talking Catholic?
No, we're talking Methodist.
Oh, okay. I'm Catholic. That's why I say
everybody,
that.
Well, everybody on both sides of the family had a lot of kids. So we had like 75 cousins around us.
My goodness.
We had a lot of cousins. So that's who I was on the... We get together, my brothers and I, every Sunday from about 5:30 to 7.
Oh.
And recently we've been including in the invitation everybody's kids. Now, some of them show up, some of them... You know, they all don't show up at the same time. But today, my nephew Wayne, my niece Dawn, my daughter Katie, and Olivia, they got on there, and like Katie, my daughter, hasn't seen Wayne, my nephew, my brother's son, in more than 15 years. Mm. So we enjoy hearing them chat about what their life is about, what they're doing.
Yeah, I bet.
Is that a COVID thing, or is that something you've been doing?
No, it's a COVID thing, because we used to try to get together as often as we could, drive into each other. We're from Massachusetts down to Virginia.
Oh.
But we would get together once a year at my house here in, I live in Betterton on the Eastern Shore now. Or we'd go to David's house in Massachusetts or Clifford's house in Virginia. We would go to each other's homes. But we decided that we were going to do this Google Meet thing. And we were going to do it just once a month, but then we decided it's too much fun, so we do it every week.
Wow.
And
last
week, my son, I'll just finish with this. Last week, my son from South Korea, without an invitation, I don't know how he did it, he just popped up on our screen. Wow. There he was. It was 8 o'clock in the morning in South Korea. He's got these big sunglasses on and a tiny little smile on his face, and we said, "Oh my God, is that Joel?" So, anyway, we do that, you know, once a week.
How wonderful!
Well, yeah,
it really is
the upside of COVID, right?
And it's a great idea.
Yeah.
We probably all should do more of that. Well, we're running out of time here.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We've got a few more minutes. Let me ask you, Congressman, what have is there something that you want to talk about that we haven't talked about? Is there something that you'd like to say? Would you like to give us your website so people can plug into what you're doing and get involved?
Well, I can say, you know, I'm not sure if I've ever looked at my website. I'm really computer illiterate, so the staff does that. But I can tell you, if you look up, if you use my name, Wayne Gilchrist, and you look up Sassafras Environmental Education Center, or even just Wayne Gilchrist and the Sassafras River, it'll pop up. And there's stuff on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook, so I don't know even what they put on Facebook. But, you know, we have something on Facebook.
I love how you are lovingly detached from technology.
Oh, yeah. And the good thing about our school, it's an outdoor school, is that right down on the water, there's no reception for cell phones or anything. So when these hordes of kids come out with their cell phones, they're not working.
Yeah, that must be distressful for them. You know, I remember when my 13-year-old stood up and pounded her fist on the table and said that she was the only 13-year-old in the entire world that didn't have a cell phone. And I looked at her mother and I said, oh, my God, do you think she really believes that? That
she
all
might
the
be correct.
The world, you
Good
know,
for
and
you.
She did. He did believe that. So we ended up getting her a cell phone, I think. I can't remember. Where can I ask you, where is the Sassafras River? I've never heard of the Sassafras River. I grew up here. I mean, since high school I've been here.
Well, when you cross the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, if you drive up 301 or Route 50 till you get on 213, and 213 is going to take you to the Chester River, which you've probably heard of.
Yeah, I know the Chester River.
Now, the Chester River and the Sassafras River is the line that makes Kent County. So the Sassafras River divides Kent County from Cecil County, and the Chester River divides Kent County from Queen Anne's County. It's the border for Kent County. And the Sassafras has high bluffs on it, like Calvert County. Really pretty.
Oh, wow.
So you're invited to come over, and I'll take you canoeing.
I would love to do that. But you have to know, I've got to be, you know, for the sake of transparency, I've got to tell you, while I was a student at Montgomery College, I was in a canoe, and I jumped into the local pond to do a fish study from the canoe and tipped the canoe over. I almost drowned. My partner almost drowned. I think the environmental the course was called field biology. I think I got a B in the course because the professor felt sorry for me that I almost lost my life. So we'll at least both have to wear life jackets.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Well, we're going to have to get Maria out here so she can watch all this.
I would love to. And just to let our listeners know, your Eastern Shore Land Conservancy website is the letters ESLC.org.
Yes, and they purchase easements. They buy farmland. They buy the development rights, which means a farmer can sell his farm, get the millions of dollars for it, and still own it.
Huh.
He still owns that farm. And the ESLC, Eastern Shore Land Conservancy, has purchased on the Eastern Shore close to 70,000 acres in the last 30 years that can never be developed.
Wow.
Boy, talk about taking care of our next generations.
Yeah, right? it's a great program. Very good program.
Nice. Thank you.
Well, thank you for all the great work you do, Wayne Gilchrist. Thank you for being on our show. We hope we can have you back again sometime and talk about some more environmental issues. Keep on talking to your family. That sounds like a great idea. We encourage other people to do that. And thanks again, folks. We're out of time here, but you know, we always leave you with a song dedicated to our guests. And tonight, because Representative Gilchrist, you had the courage to stand up for D.C. statehood, we're leaving you with a classic from the Beatles, A Little Help from My Friends.
Oh, nice.
Thank you, so, Michael and Maria. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for your time. And we always want to thank our listeners, too, because without you, this program wouldn't be possible. And we know you've got lots of choices out there, and we really appreciate you continue to patronize us and to share our podcasts, which are live on Sundays, but available to download and share thereafter.
Thanks, America.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.